MMA Madhouse.com Live, episode 139. I guess I better give a shout out to our sponsors, our kick ass sponsors, like Clinch Custom Mouth Guards, Intimidation Clothing, Tank Crimes, Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop, Draco Impact Armor, Pro Am Belts, Game Changer Clothing, Triumph Fitness, Big T's Nightclub, Crossroader Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, Hype Fight Store, Never Tap, Brawl Base, and 24 NLB. And here's Skippy's intro music. Skippy, how's it going, brother?
What's up, Skull? I'm having technical difficulties.
Well, should we get my partner in crime in here right away?
That's probably a good idea.
Yo, this is for my ninja. Real ninja. Who ain't afraid?
I think you guys are introducing the wrong person, man. I'm expecting Insane Clown Posse to be joining us now.
I'm sorry. I had a backflash there. I thought we were doing Inside the Asylum for a second.
I just had to do that.
Dude, what's going on, fellas? Carl, you're going to be in an event this weekend.
Yeah, man. Super excited. Battle for the Border 2, Cranbrook, BC, January 1st. Super excited. Can't wait.
It's been far too long, my friend, since you and your camera were at a mixed martial arts event.
Yeah, I'm going to give it a workout, that's for sure. It has been way too long.
Have you been working your snap finger, like the button pusher one? Have you been practicing a little bit so you don't get sore?
Not too much, no. I think I'm good. It's easy. Point and click.
Skippy seems to think you should be warming up. You should go through a good stretching routine when you get there. Maybe do some yoga that day, fire up a big fat doobie, and then eat some edibles, and then try to take pictures.
That sounds like disaster written all over it to me, man.
I got my
technical difficulties sorted out here finally.
Right. See, that's why we have to have two people cover Budo Sports, dude, because usually Skippy and I get so retarded that the two of us working as individuals cover the work of one person.
And trust me, when we send 12 people, it's kind of hard to get them in suspense.
12 people, yeah.
Dude,
I like it when we cover
events
like 14 strong. It's like, I'm like, what do I do? I'm just going to hang out and watch the fights. That was, like, so much more fun because, like, with 12 people there, like, I'm just like, I felt like I was Rufus KO just hanging out, man, just chilling. I was like, I got my little interns running around, homie. I got my little intern. Go over there. Run over there, little intern. Go take a picture.
Dude, it's true because we were, like, you were stationed upstairs on the second floor of this event, Carl, and where the commentator and the video camera, the setup for all that is. And I was down by the cage, and we were like, hey, go get a picture of this guy. Go interview that guy. Hey, get this girl and get some photos with her sponsors. I mean, like, it was one of the best ways ever to cover a show. You go with 10 interns and me and Lepaki, and you will get the best coverage. All we're asking for is 12 press passes, folks, and we will make sure you get the best coverage ever.
Oh, fuck. Dave Jansen just blew his ACL out.
No way.
Yeah.
Then I bought a ticket, too, for Caitlin's dad. I bought him a ticket to that show, too.
That's right. That's right.
Dude, Caitlin's dad was a badass.
Yeah,
Any dude that will drive his daughter, like, 3 hours to cover fight is a badass, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, I
agree.
Give it up to Caitlin's dad. Even though I had a hard time talking to him because I was fucked up. I'm like, yeah, this is who your daughter hangs out with. I'm going to go hide in the corner while you're around, sir. Thanks for bringing her.
Hey, I guess we're going to kick off the show. We're doing a show tonight, folks. It's the Godfathers of Canadian MMA. And it looks like our first guest up tonight should be Bill Mahood. You guys, if you don't know about him, get on Google, because this guy's legit. He's one of the pretty much the founding fathers of the sport that we all love, especially they love up there. So it's going to be super exciting to talk to these guys. And Lepaki, I could be wrong, but I believe he has fought just as recently as last year. So, I mean, you know, along with, you know, career, it's great to see it.
I wonder if he ever, if there was ever a point in his life where he wanted to be known as Bill Manhood. Apparently that was a dud. Okay, I want to ask
that
question.
Yeah, but let's look at, you know, let's look at his overall record is 20-9, I believe. With
one draw, 67% win rate. That's great, dude. If you're a degenerate gambler and you're hitting it like 67%, you're fucking rolling in the dough.
And let's be, dude, he has fought for some great organizations, from MFC, Ultimate Ring Challenge, UFC, KOTC, Strikeforce, Bodog. How sick is that, man? I mean, he fought in St. Petersburg for Bodog. That's sick. And got the win. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, he's got some great fights throughout his career. He's fought some interesting names, you know?
Yeah, dude, he beat up Shannon Rich.
Mm.
Who's the guy? Remember, Shannon Rich is the guy that just went over to Europe a couple of weeks ago and had the title fight, and he was like 51-76 or something. I think that's Shannon Rich's record. I'm going to look just because I don't want to say that if I'm wrong.
Shannon the Cannon Rich.
Yeah, and I think he actually trains down with the Apex people sometimes.
Yeah, he's 52-76.
Yeah, 54. I got 54-81.
That's great.
Oh, he fought Solly Sprout, who Jared Torgerson just knocked out in December. Wow. Dude, yeah, we got some good guests tonight. Oh, yeah, dude. Bill fought Patrick Cote. I forgot about that. That was way back in the day. At King of the Cage.
Dude,
see, King of the Cage,
Forrest,
man, they used to be almost like King of the Mountain. You know that? Like,
yeah.
In the early 2000s, dude, King of the Cage was like, I don't understand how they've fallen so far off the map. I mean, not that they have. I don't want people to think, like, oh, King of the Cage is some fucking schlep. And wasn't that one of the guys on the Three Stooges, schlep? Like, he was, like, one of the replacements?
Yeah. No, but I see the point there, because they were dominant. They were up there. But for some reason, and I believe it's because they've broken down and sold it out like franchises, that's hurt the overall branding. Because King of the Cage Canada, from what I've always entailed, I've heard nothing but great things about the guys up there who run King of the Cage. So, oh, sorry, Carl, I'm not paying attention.
Oh, yeah, dude, Bill also fought Forrest Griffin.
Hey, well, let's bring him on. Bill, you there, brother?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Hey, welcome to Madhouse Live. You're on with Lepaki and Skippy. Bill Mahood, everybody, the one and only, man, one of the godfathers of MMA in Canada. Welcome to the show, brother.
Glad to be here.
We were just actually
Alicia called me a godfather as opposed to an old fart, which is kind of what I'm getting lately.
Oh, no way. I mean, look, we were actually just talking about how an impressive career you've had and some of the great organizations you fought for, and obviously one of my all-time faves is the Bodog fight. How much did you enjoy fighting in St. Petersburg for that event?
Well, I'll tell you, let me say that when Bodog finally, you know, when they folded up, there was quite a few of us who shed many a tear because, you know, not only were they, you know, a super cool, you know, idea, but, you know, Calvin Air and the promoters in Russia and stuff, they just treated all the fighters so well. It was five-star hotels, first class everywhere. It was just incredible.
Dude, and they had some gnarly freaking ring girls, man. Bodog was, like, on the cutting edge. Like, they grasped the theory of ring girls early on.
Yeah, it was definitely fun, for sure.
Now, like, when you fought for Bodog, opposed to, you know, some of the other organizations, excluding the hotel room, which obviously that's a rarity for most people to get, you know, five-star treatment, what was the number one thing they did for fighters that you were just impressed with over everybody else?
You know, I think it was everything. I mean, the hotel was nice. I mean, they fed us. Their whole concept was different. So, where, you know, you normally go to a fight card, you know, you're there a couple of days. Well, because they were filming us, you know, we were in St. Petersburg. I want to say it was like 10 days. So we were always out on location filming all sorts of things. When they put the fights to air, you know, those hours and hours and hours of filming, you know, turn into 15 seconds of, you know, of airtime. But we were still all over the place. Probably the best Bodog memory would be after the fights. We were all in the back room, you know, and everyone's sweating and bleeding and stinking, and a bunch of Russian Secret Service people came and grabbed us, stuck us on a bus, and brought us to a winter palace, and we went and hung out with Vladimir Putin and Jean-Claude Van Damme for the night.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, wearing fight shorts, bleeding and smelling. Very, very strange. Almost surreal.
Now, is that probably the coolest guy, Putin, you've ever met due to your career?
You know, he was, you know, there's been lots of really cool guys I've been fortunate enough to meet. He was a very overwhelmingly powerful personality. He's a very little guy. Comes up, shakes your hand, you got his crazy steely blue eyes, and you just know, I mean, he used to be a KGB chief, and you just look at him and you realize, man, this dude is for real.
That's sweet. So take Bodog out of the picture. You've gotten all the fight all over the world, especially at home. Do you prefer to fight in front of the fans in Canada, or do you like traveling more?
Well, you know, for fighting at home is awesome because, you know, people know you more. They're a lot more, you know, into the fight, and you, I guess, as an athlete. But I mean, if you got to have a choice of, say, I don't know, traveling down to, I fought the Gold Coast of Australia and fighting in Edmonton. Now, I love Edmonton. I'm in Edmonton right now doing a training course, and I love Edmonton. Edmonton fans are probably some of the best fans in the country. But I got to say, if I got to fight in Edmonton in December or, you know, Brisbane, Australia, probably going to go to Brisbane.
Amen.
No,
I think that's one of the unfortunate changes that's really taken over mixed martial arts, Bill, is that a lot of these guys are so focused on fighting for this one organization that they fail to grasp all the things that they could use this sport to do and the places that they could get paid to go and do what they love to do.
Yeah, you know, we were just talking about actually this today, and you know, if you look at, you know, I was trying to explain to a couple guys who, you know, not have been involved in the game. I said, you know, fight athletes, fighters, you know, a lot like musicians, you know, rock and rollers. You know, there's going to be those 1% of the guys who make all the money. And then there's everybody else who's, you know, playing in little bars trying to, you know, put together a few bucks. So, you know, for those guys like you, myself, you know, I might have made it to the UFC, but, you know, you don't cash in a really big paycheck. And for the most part, you know, you're just toiling because you love the sport. So if you're doing that and you can add some, you know, some real cool experiences and some great travel. I mean, I'm a real traveler anyway, and I've been lucky. I've you know, been to Korea, I've been to Japan, Australia, Ecuador, Costa Rica. You know, I've been all over the world on someone else's nickel, hanging out with, you know, with my, you know, lifelong best friends, and you know, you get really close to the guys you train with, and you're on all these crazy trips together. It's just you know, you just can't ever compare the experience. I wouldn't trade it for anything, even though I, you know, in the end, you know, you don't make any money and you bust your body and, you know, you're paying for it for the rest of your life, but, you know, you just can't trade it in.
Yeah, like, see, that's like my sister. She played collegiate softball, and then she had the opportunity to go and play all over Europe, and she jumped at that opportunity and did it for like 3 years because while she was poor as a, you know, as all get up over there, I mean, she got to experience things and go places that, you know, I mean, she would have never had the opportunity to do without, you know, if she didn't play softball. And it just really is so frustrating for me to see guys, like, so dead set on, like, and I understand, like, it's great to have a goal, but at sometimes you also need to build your brand. And by going global with your fight game, I think is the best way to build your brand as a fighter and ensure a longer stay at that upper echelon.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, there's such a different feel for things now. I mean, when I got started, you know, there wasn't a real expectation that you were going to go anywhere. So basically, you just fought because you love fighting. You fought as much as you could in as many places as you could, and you'd pretty much go anywhere they'd have you. And you know, a lot of guys came up that way. And sometimes it bites you a little. Like one of my, you know, good friends and you know, students back in the day was Cajun Johnson, Raging Cajun. You know, and basically back in the day, he started fighting at 17. And back in the day, you just took whatever fight came up. I mean, we fought, he was 18 years old. We fought Josh Thompson on 4 days' notice. And, you know, so he pulled some losses on his record that, you know, nowadays you'd never take those fights because you're always in your head thinking, okay, there's a chance to go to this upper echelon. Back in those days, no, that wasn't what you fought. You just fought. You didn't worry about the wins and losses. You know, so now the guys who are like Cajun, who are still fighting, and they're kind of, you know, got 1 foot in the past and, you know, and kind of like 2 feet in the future, they got to pay a little for that. The new guys are very careful with who they fight, when they fight, and the rest, or at least a lot of them are.
Now, touching on that, seeing as, you know, you were there when the sport started to develop, it's late 99, you and the guys are hanging out. What was that decision that said, I'm going to give this a shot, I'm going to make a serious, what happened that summer to make you go into 2000 and say, I'm giving it everything I got?
You know, I don't ever think there was an actual cognitive decision. It was just, you know, I'm a lifelong martial artist. I've always trained in something. My dad was a pro boxer, so I mean, I was in a boxing gym when I was 5 years old. So I always did some form of combat sport. Now, I remember watching, you know, my very first UFC, it was like UFC 1. A buddy and myself were Hapkido guys. And we were, you know, sitting around with another bunch of martial arts geeks, and we watched this at a bar and thought, wow, that's really cool. And we started mucking around. And, you know, a couple of years later, we're bringing guys like Oleg Tokarov up to Prince George to do seminars. And, you know, and it just kind of evolved and it kind of grew. And then next thing you know, there's actually guys who are maybe starting to put fight cards on. My first card was, you know, on a kickboxing card, and they got a couple of guys in northern British Columbia who were going to do NHB, because it wasn't even called MMA back then. It was no holds barred, NHB. And we jumped on the card and, you know, scrapped it out. I mean, no gloves, no real rules, and you just kind of did it because it looked cool on TV. There was no real thinking about, oh, hey, you know, I'm going to try and be a, you know, like a basketball guy. I'm going to try and make the NBA. You know, there was none of that. You just did it because you loved it.
Okay, so you have that, you and the boys have that mentality, man. This is just something we want to do. We love it. You know, we're not looking at this time, you know, in the early 2000s, you're not thinking UFC and like kids today. So when you're dealing with these kids today, because you have a lot of interaction with the next generation of professionals, how do you get them to understand and love the sport like you guys did and not be so determined and focus only on one single goal, and if they don't make it, they fail?
Yeah, I think it's tough. You know, a lot of the coaches out there today, you have to mentor the new, you know, breed that's coming up. And that's why I'm so heavily involved in the amateur movement, you know, as the chairman for the Mixed Martial Arts Association of British Columbia, the amateur movement there. Now I'm in Alberta. We're helping to develop the amateur here. I'm involved nationally with the Canadian Amateur Mixed Martial Arts Federation. And the big thing is, you know, you need to create a platform where youth can participate in our sport at all levels. You know, from the 8-year-old kid who's wanted to do a pancration fight at a tournament, so, you know, where there's no striking to the head and they're just, you know, playing around like the old karate taekwondo tournaments of the days, working their way through, starting to work from pancration into kind of mixed martial arts, and starting to work up to when you're actually doing, you know, like A-class amateur fights where they're starting to look a lot more like a pro fight, although there's still, you know, a lot more, you know, rules in there. Then when they decide they want to go pro, that's when you really got to start talking about, okay, you know, what's the long-term plan here? And I think the amateur fights really help sort that out. Back in our day, if you wanted to fight, you went pro, you fought pro, and you just, things happen. Nowadays, you can have a dozen amateur fights, and maybe you never go pro. It's out of your system. the guys who go pro now can have all that experience, they have a much more defined game plan, and then they can actually move forward and try and do something as a career, or, you know, as something they want to attempt as a career. But I still tell everybody, you know, you should always have, you know, you shouldn't put all your eggs into one basket. I mean, in one sense, you don't want to tell someone, hey, you know, you should have a good backup plan because you're going to fail. But in the other sense, they also need to make sure that, you know, that they have other things in their lives.
So do you think that there's a point in the future, since you're affiliated with the amateur scene up there heavily, that Canada will have a unified sanctioning body rather than Quebec has theirs and Ontario has theirs and BC has theirs, and then, like, even these smaller pockets, when they start breaking it down into, like, even regions of the province, is there any point in time that we may be able to see, like, a unified organization up there that oversees that? Because I think the Quebec scene is something that, the amateur scene especially, is something that is very, very fun to watch. There's great fights going on there, and not a lot of people know about it.
Yeah, I mean, you have to look at it from a professional and a separate amateur stance, because the way our Section 83 of the Canadian Criminal Code is written, and it's undergoing a change right now, it's in its final reading going through the Senate, so we're going to see a total revamping of that to specify mixed martial arts so that, you know, our sport now is secured in legislation, and it's also going to specify... It's also going to specify that you have to have an amateur governing body. Now, the way the law is written is all the provinces have the power to regulate the sport. So in Quebec, Nova Scotia, Ontario, now British Columbia, the government has decided the province is going to take control and regulate the sport provincially. Alberta still regulates it municipally, so you have now varying athletic commissions. And it's difficult when you have quite a few small ones. I don't think you're going to end up with one big national body. What we're hoping to see through the Canadian Combat Sport Federation, which used to be the CBF, the Canadian Boxing Federation, is an ABC-like body in Canada. So we have an Association of Boxing Commissions in the States that produces rules that all the commissions in the States follow. Canada is going to have the CBF, or the CBF's turned into the Canadian Combat Sport Federation. They'll produce rules. All of the commissions, hopefully provincial commissions, will adhere it. So we'll all have one standard, both amateur and professionally. Then things get a little easier.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very. I have a hard time sometimes keeping up because it gets so, like, when you try to, like, figure out what's going on up there. And especially, like, about 3 months ago, I think late February, there was at one point where the province of Quebec had completely, like, outlawed amateur mixed martial arts, like, hours before events were to go off.
Yeah, there's some difficulties everywhere. BC is, because of what we've been doing with Mixed Martial Arts Association of British Columbia, things are becoming much clearer. The new provincial commission will appoint an amateur body officially to run the amateur scene in the province, and we're hoping that MMABC will be that body. In Quebec, there has been no official body. So the way the law is written right now is amateur competitions are legal. And there is not saying anything about what you have to do or who has to regulate it. It's just kind of a gong show. So with this new Section 83 being put into place, it forces the provinces to actually appoint an amateur governing body. Now, once that happens, it makes everything clear. Now there's not any conflict as is it allowed or isn't it allowed? You know, can you have it, can't you have it? Every municipality, people are just confused. It'll bring clarity, and hopefully that will help bolster the amateur scene.
Now, with trying to get a standardized set of rules across the board, in your opinion, how much do you think that will help draw in the mainstream person that maybe is not a fan of the sport at this point?
You're talking amateur or pro?
Amateur.
You know, the amateur scene, you know, in all sports is a lot more, you know, local fan driven, I want to say, whether it's, you know, softball, basketball, hockey. You know, there's not a lot of people who are going to go, you know, pay good money to watch a bunch of amateur hockey players. But who goes and watches those amateur hockey players, the friends and the family and the people, you know, close to the people who are competing? I think that as we're allowing the professional sport to flourish, the amateur sport will grow alongside, but it won't be as much as of a big paid spectator sport. It will be guys who are, you know, putting in the work to become a professional. Right now in British Columbia, it's a little bit of an anomaly just because in the lower mainland, there was no ability to hold professional shows. So we were getting a lot of promoters who were promoting amateur shows to a very high production level. And they were looking a lot like pro shows. And there was getting a lot of people coming out and watching. We're getting, you know, thousands of people coming out to watch, you know, AFC events or Battlefield events or Warpath events. Once those guys are able to promote pro shows, we're going to probably see a lot of pro-am shows happening. And then on just the purely amateur side, you know, you're still going to get those 800 to 1,000 people out. But I don't think ever, you know, an amateur-only show is going to get a TV deal because, I mean, amateurs are still amateurs. People aren't going to pay big money to watch amateurs when they can pay money to watch pros.
Well, do you think that maybe we will see more pro-ams due to the direction you're taking this, that maybe promoters will take that chance to put one or two pro fights on the main?
I think on the smaller cards especially, and for two reasons. One, you know, a smaller card, say in a, you know, say like Grand Prairie or Edmonton, Prince George, you know, you might have your six pro fights, and they might range from, you know, the top guys getting paid, you know, 1,000 and 1,000, working down to the bottom end of the pros. But they're going to also throw some of those amateurs on because they're local guys. They're going to sell tickets. They're going to draw in fans and people. And it also helps develop, you know, a following for those amateurs. So when they turn pro and as they build up through the ranks, they get a bigger fan following. I mean, you look at like a Ryan Ford in Edmonton, you know, he started out, you know, with a few people coming. Now when Ryan Ford fights in Edmonton, I mean, half the bloody crowd comes out to see him. And that's because they've developed his brand in this city, starting small, working big. And I think a lot of the smart promoters are going to do the same thing. You know, I think we'll see a few promotions that might have amateur-only cards to develop fighters, and then they'll move those, the better of those, onto their bottom ends of their pro-AMA cards. And then those AMs, when they turn pro, will then also work through that organization.
Well, it sounds like you guys are looking at the long term for the athletes in this sport who want to make a career out of it, and I like that. The way you guys are trying to implement a set of rules and development process from the pancration all the way through to the pros, I think it's very admirable. And, you know, how much time do you have to spend on this? The last year, 6 months? How much have you spent on this to get this far?
Oh, it's ridiculous. I mean, we started looking at putting the Association of British Columbia back together in 2009. We actually legally incorporated it in like April of 2010. We've regulated over 60 shows since then. And, I mean, it's a constant battle, you know, working with municipalities and levels of government and such to become accepted, to get everybody on board, working with, you know, teams and fighters. And we still have a couple of, you know, what we call, I don't know, rogue promoters or unregulated, who just, they don't care. Nobody's making them be regulated. So they'll do a wink, wink, nudge, nudge amateur card, and they'll use pro rules, and it's just a gong show, and someone's going to get hurt. So we're at it for fighter safety. We're at it for the continuity of our sport, because we want to protect our sport. And that's the most important, get as many people involved as we can. And then of that group, there will be those guys who turn into the Rory McDonalds and such. I mean, Rory had his very first pro fight on my card in Prince George when he was 16 years old, and I had a hell of a time convincing the Prince George Athletic Commission to allow this 16-year-old to fight professionally, you know, and because they knew me that I wasn't going to, you know, BS them, like, listen, this ain't no normal 16-year-old, and, it, you know, it proved out to be correct. But, you know, that's the kind of guy we're seeing come up now. We're seeing these kids who've been in the gym since they were 8, 9, 10 years old. And they're just becoming just deadly little teenagers who are going to turn into just really competent, well-rounded mixed martial artists.
So now, would you be – this is something that I've thought about for quite a while at the amateur level. Would you be against a mandated 30-day suspension after all amateur fights?
You know, we talk a lot about it. See, when we say amateur fights, everyone just envisions one thing. When I say amateur fights, I'm seeing everything from that weekend tournament that happens at, you know, the BCIT, and you've got everything from the karate guys, the taekwondo guys, the wushu guys, but there's also some pancration happening, or for the better part, MMA. And, I mean, you start as little as 8-year-old. They got 8-year-old kids having little tournament matches. You know, there's no striking to the head. They might punch the tummy, and then when they hit the ground, all they do is grapple. That'll progress up from what we call C-class into B-class. Same thing. You're at a tournament. You're open match. Guys there might compete, I don't know what, 5, 6, 7 times in one afternoon. I mean, just like they do in karate and judo and taekwondo and everything else. Now, once you start progressing through to when you actually are stepping into what we call an A-class match, which is something more likely that someone's going to have paid money to come see, now you're looking at standard suspensions that are issued by pro commissions. So for us, we give a mandatory 7 days. So you walk in there, do a flying armbar, and you win, you're still getting 7-day suspension. If you take any amount of abuse whatsoever, it turns to 14. 14 turns into 21. Every TKO was mandated 30 days, even if it's a really light TKO. If you're knocked out, it's 60 days. You know, so we follow those same professional guidelines. Now, you also have to remember, in those amateur bouts, the A-class amateur bouts, they're using 7-ounce gloves, and the stoppages are way quicker. So when you're TKO'd, that could be as simple as, you know, you got a flash knockdown. Well, the fight stopped. It's amateur. So the level of stoppages is considerably less than a pro fight. So even what we call a knockout, which we have very few of, you know, very rarely do we see someone who's one punch knocked out, like unconscious. The fights are usually stopped long before that. But, yeah, no, I'm big on the suspensions. I give out suspensions all the time. We also have a concussion protocol. So whenever anyone is hurt in any way, we follow up with them, you know, by telephone and email to make sure they're doing okay and to remind them that, you know, they shouldn't have any exercise for the first week, light exercise 2 weeks, no contact for, you know, 3 weeks or even 30 days. So we're constantly working on that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess my concern is that, like, I sit here and I watch this NFL situation play out, and then I look at mixed martial arts, and I sit there and I wonder myself, you know, a lot of these guys that are now having these serious brain problems were playing the sport in its infancy, and I think that right now while we're in the infancy of mixed martial arts, that if we're a little bit more proactive in that concussion realm, which it sounds like that's something that you guys have kind of taken head on, which isn't something that happens frequently here in the States. That we could actually prevent a lot of that before we even get to that situation and find ourselves in some type of a predicament like the NFL is currently.
Well, absolutely. And with the Amateur Association, as we grow and we develop club members, so we have promoter members, individual members. We also have gym members. The gym members, when they become a member of the association, they also follow certain guidelines and protocols, which helps them get cheaper insurance and helps give some assurances to some parents and such. And we have things like, you know, you're not doing full contact sparring until you're like, you know, 13 years old anyway. And even then, it's light. It's not, you know, what I consider full. But contact sparring, you don't even do it when you're kids. Where you see some of the gyms in the old, you know, with some old school coaches, you know, they got the kids going in there and having, you know, good old down knockout sparring sessions, you know, 10 years old. Well, they're just too little, and their brains are too undeveloped. And all the data that's being collected now with youth and concussion just screams, you know, don't let these guys get hit in the head. And we really try and push that, you know. And then once they start sparring, it's very, very controlled. It's supervised. There's concussion protocols to make sure that if something happens where if a kid gets a concussion, it's identified, it's watched, and they don't continue to, you know, make it worse. And I think that a lot of the junior level hockey and stuff up here in Canada are starting to do that as well, because, you know, the kid takes a, you know, falls down even and hits his head on the ice. How do you know? If he has a concussion, you need to, you know, you need to stop any further damage. So, and even in the, I think the junior football in the States, they're starting to have a much better look at that. And we're just, you know, doing that same thing here and trying to protect the youth.
Well, Bill, two things. One, I would love if you would come back on again, because we're going to run out of time with you, and we haven't barely scratched the surface because I want to talk to you about weight cutting, blood work, and a bunch of other stuff. So before we do run out of time, I want you to have a chance to give out any information to fans, fighters, any sponsors, any shout-outs, anything you want. Please take your time.
Well, you know, our association is growing in British Columbia, and it's www.mmabc.ca, and that's really the, I guess, the grassroots organization that we're now using as a model to create the associations in Alberta, Saskatchewan. We're working all the way across the country, creating a national organization called the Canadian Amateur Mixed Martial Arts Federation, and we've now been accepted in membership into the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation. And they've just announced World Amateur Championships in Vegas, July of 2014. So, you know, things are really starting to come. And I would just say that, you know, people got to get behind the amateur scene and to help start help it grow. They need to get involved, put some time and effort in, and not expect, you know, remuneration. Just get in there and, you know, and make it better.
Well, Bill, please, I look forward maybe in a couple of weeks we can get you back on again and continue talking about the rules and regulation and what you're doing, because it's real important for people here in the States to hear some of what you guys are doing, because you're definitely leading by what we'd like people to follow, you know, by your example down here. And I thank you so much for what you've done for the sport. As a fan, I thank you for all the great things in the ring that you put in there.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for, you know, giving me an opportunity to talk a lot about the amateur. It's something that's so super close to my heart. And, you know, there's a group of us who've worked tirelessly up here on it. And, you know, and the only way that it's going to work is to, you know, get the word out there and just keep getting people on board. So thank you.
Anytime. And look to talking to you soon. Labaki.
Hey, right, Bill, thank you. It was a pleasure chatting with you this evening.
All right. Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Everybody, guys, get out
I
there.
I should have really asked
him
that question. Is he still on with us?
You got me there?
Yeah.
Yeah, Bill.
Okay, so you know, did you ever think about, like, having your nickname be Bill Manhood Mahood?
Yeah, my wife, she stretched that one off. She wouldn't want to let the secret out there. She figured I'd get too many fight groupies trying to chase me down.
Oh, thank you, Bill.
Okay, guys, take care.
Oh, folks, hey, from one Canadian legend to the next, if you guys don't know who this man is and the organization that he's been running in Canada for such a long time, you guys obviously are living under a rock, because his promotion and one of his fights was my nominee last year for Fight of the Year and Promotion of the Year. Lee Mean, how are you doing tonight?
Doing great.
Well, thank you for joining us on MMA Madhouse Live. You're on with Lapaki and Skippy and Carl the Madman. We're talking with the godfathers of Canadian MMA tonight, and you being one of the most pivotal ones.
Appreciate that.
You just had an event last weekend. How was that for you?
It was awesome. Amateur show in Saskatchewan. The fans had a great time. We did it as a fundraiser for the golf course in the small community of Shaunavon, Saskatchewan. And it was great to give back to the community there, and had a couple of local guys from there that trained with me fight at home. So, you know, that was the whole point of me starting shows in the first place, was for our hometown guys getting the chance to fight in front of their family and friends. So it was great.
Now, I hear that my fight of the year for amateur fights last year was Tyler and Amante, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Heard Tyler came and put another phenomenal fight on.
Yeah, it was great. Fought Derek Daku from Estevan, and it was a great fight. Crowd loved it. Even though Tyler, the hometown guy, lost, everybody was entertained and walked away happy.
Now, you've had the pleasure of honestly having some of the greatest Canadian mixed martial artists ever come through your promotion. When you look back at the beginning, like you said just a few minutes ago, you do this so guys have a place to fight. Did you ever expect that you would be considered one of the pioneers of MMA, period, anywhere, let alone in Canada?
not why we started it, right? With no end outcome. We didn't get into doing it to make money. I just did it as I wanted the chance. I paid to go fight somewhere. I paid my own entry fee. I paid my own hotel, my own gas money. And I was like, this is crazy. Well, you know, as a fighter, I shouldn't have to do that when people are buying tickets to watch. And I thought, you know, something could be different. I could do something different for the fighters. And I'm just happy it's progressed to where it's at and been able to be a part of it along the way with other great promoters and great fighters and to be involved in the sport. So, you know, and again, I'm not even close to being done. I still got more fights in me. I got tons more shows I'm going to promote. And you're going to see a lot of, you know, top-level talent come through the show yet. So I'm excited.
Now, we've had a lot of great fighters come on this show who you've gotten a chance to fight, and they all hold you in such high respect. Whether you're taking a short notice fight to fill in to help out a promotion, or whether you've had a full camp to train, how do you teach your kids to carry that same kind of respect and honor that you've built in the sport today?
You know, I think it's one of those things, just the mentality, you know, I have as a fighter and a coach, and I pass that on just from every day being around them, and the mentality we have of, well, we're here to fight. And it's not the end of the world if you lose a fight either. You know, obviously for my pros are trying to get into the UFC, your records, everything. And so you have to be more guarded and careful on your planning and what you do there. But for myself, you know, I'm not going anywhere in the sport as far as that goes. So I just fight when I feel like it. If I feel in shape and I want to fight, or, you know, a lot of times short notice fights for me are a guy, you know, I feel bad for the guy who got ready for a fight and his guy pulled out. And I feel bad for the promoter because I know what that's like when a guy pulls out last minute because of an injury or whatever. So I just feel like, oh, man, let's help this out. And I always love to scrap. So whether I'm in great shape or not, it's fun, right? So I just – my guys know that. They see by what I do and how I act and how I love the sport and how I love martial arts. And they see that attitude and, you know, they go with it. So it's fun. It's got a great team.
Now, you just touched on something.
I just love that he said, I love to scrap. Like, I just love hearing that. Like, he's like, I just love to scrap. Like, too many of these guys, like, it's just like, see, that's the fighter mentality. And today we're stuck with this athlete mentality. And that's really, like, where I'm drawing my line in the sand at. I want more fighters, Lee. I want more fighters. Less athletes.
Yeah.
And, athletic, you know, fighters are good, but athletes can go play football.
Yep. And, you know, again, I always say you can train guys fighting stuff, but you can't make someone a fighter. And you can get athletic people, and you can train them fundamental techniques, and they can be really good. But not everyone has that fight in them that they just want to scrap, whether it's in the ring or outside, where they have that in them, you know. But that doesn't mean an athlete guy can't be champion and can't be great. You know, I believe they can. And you can get tough by being in the gym and training with tough guys, and you can develop a certain edge. But again, when the going gets tough and the business side of things kick in, and you know, like you say, yeah, the more the athlete guy tends to look at being more conservative and less risk taking and all that, and which is good. And with the way the sport's going, with, you know, if you lose your cut and all that kind of stuff, like how the UFC runs things, you know, you have to think more careful and be more selective, because you only got a small window to make your money and to make a mark. And so if you're too reckless and too much fighter, well, then you could hurt your career as well. So, you know, it's a trade-off on both ends. But, you know, Jordan always jokes around. He goes, I know I'll be champion one day, but I probably won't hold the belt very long because I'm always going to go for it, which means I'm probably going to get caught somewhere along the way as well. I don't want to fight safe and conservative. So...
But no.
At times does that frustrate you with him?
With Jordan?
Yeah.
That he wants to go for it?
Yeah.
No.
Because
that
once
makes...
again, this goes to Lee saying the difference between a fighter who's athletic and an athletic guy who fights. Lee's a fighter. Jordan's a fighter. Jordan's and that's something I've seen from his career. He has no problem leaving it in the ring, win, lose, or draw. He's going out there to win, and if he gets knocked out, he did it with everything he had. And that's what I like about the kid.
Yeah.
And now, how do you – like I said, you've had great guys fight on your cards, but anybody who's watched your events, your own students are some phenomenal, phenomenal fighters. And when you get a kid who's an aggressive amateur, you know, in the same frame as Jordan was, how do you mold that the right way? How do you tell him, I want you to use this aggression, when you don't have other kids that have that same drive and aggression?
You know, I just let it sort itself out in the gym. I believe I have the right teaching methods. I believe we have the right team and the right leadership with the team, that they will gravitate the right way. Sometimes I have to give a speech now and then to the team to, you know, refocus them or something. But for the most part, it's pretty self-corrective. If I know a guy's got potential and they tell me they want to do it as a career, well, I've learned, too, to hold them accountable to their goals. Don't tell me you want to fight and then stop showing up to training. You know, you like the idea of fighting, but do you really want to fight? And if you want to fight, you got to sacrifice a lot. It means family, work, everything gets in the way. So you got to make some, you got to find balance so you don't lose your wife and your job, but you got to be here too. And if you're here in the gym, you will get the skills necessary to go far. And then you hope for some luck to get, you know, no injuries and win a fight and, you know, those type of things. But I think it's, and again, biggest part to me is the mental aspect of it, and how guys, some guys are good fighters, but they mentally can't handle the pressure of knowing you have to fight and waiting a month to do it is way harder than scrapping at the bar or, you know, someone picks a fight with you somewhere when you're out. That just happens, and you just deal with it. It's the mental anxiety and the pressure that most people can't handle, and that's the hardest part to train, because it's like any other skill. It's a mental skill you have to develop. You know, you develop your physical body and your flexibility and your power and your speed and your techniques. Well, your mental technique and your mental power and strength, being able to deal with stress, and that's an important thing as well. So,
Lee, when you made that walk for your first fight, did you wish that they had a porta potty at the cage right before you stepped in, or was it that nerve wracking?
No, it was. I mean, nervous butterflies, excitement. But I was just pumped. So I didn't, again, it's one of those things you don't know what you're doing yourself. It's not as bad. That fight's more nerve-wracking, I find, for most fighters, because they know now what to expect. Win or lose, they know what can happen. And now they have to deal with that. Now they know what the weight cut's like. They know what leading up to a fight is like. Now they know that the other guys know stuff, too, and now, what if this guy knows more than the last guy, and then your head starts playing with you, and that's when it starts kicking in. Most first-time fighters have never fought. They don't know the nerves. They don't know what to expect. So it really doesn't overwhelm them quite as much as a second fight. Or you get guys who are 5-0, 6-0, 7-0, and it starts mounting more and more because now they're afraid of losing. So.
Yeah, we got to talk to a guy who has a title fight this weekend last night, and we were talking about his early part of his amateur career. And I asked him what fight he learned the most about. He said, I learned the most about fighting in my first fight, but I learned the most about myself. No, I learned the most about myself in the first fight, and I learned more about fighting in my second fight.
Yeah.
Because he learned that he had what it took to, like, you know, make that walk and then hear the cage lock, and then he knew what it took, you know. At the end of that,
yeah.
At the end of that night, he knew what it took to, you know, to get back in there. And then after his second fight, he said, "I knew what it took to actually win a fight." He goes, "I started out 0-2, then I won 3 fights, then I lost a fight, then I'm on a 5-fight win streak now." So, I mean, I definitely see exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, and again, everyone handles it differently. Some guys implode, and some guys relish on that adrenaline and that nerve, and they eat it up. And it's all a perception, right? So, it's not real. It's just what you're thinking. So if you can handle it and you can deal with it, you'll be fine. If you can't, well, then it eats you up and you and you see lots of UFC guys that talk about that now, about having, you know, stress syndromes and anxiety and depression and how, you know, that it wrecks their career. So, yeah.
So I got to ask you, as somebody who's watched quite a few of your events, a lot of your fighters, one thing that comes across to me consistently is their impressive ground. Your guys consistently across the board have solid ground game. I'm curious, who's running the ground at your gym?
I teach everything at the gym. Every aspect of every fighter, everything my guys know, I taught them. So all their bad habits and things, I taught them those too. So,
well, dude, you're doing amazing.
It's a learning, curve for everybody. Yeah.
You should blame the bad habits on Jordan.
Yeah, he's lazy, that kid. Jeez.
So what is it that these kids seem to just eat up your ground techniques? Because, you know, like when you had the card last year and you brought up a bunch of the guys, I believe it was from Extreme Couture, you know,
yeah.
Your boys consistently on that card had no problem with these guys on the ground, which, you know, theoretically, you know, you would assume where they came from that they should be more dominant on the ground than your boys, but your boys seemed to handle it like cake. It was impressive to see.
Yeah. Well, that comes back to the whole theory of, you know, when you come from a small town, going to the big cities, ooh, look, you're going to the big city, or someone's from Montreal, oh, they got to be better because from there, or they're from New York. You can't beat someone from New York. Oh, the guy's from Holland, well, you can't beat a striker from Holland. Oh, the guy's from Thailand, well, they're unbeatable in Thailand because that's where Thai, you know, Muay Thai came from. And you just have to get past that myth. There's just another guy. He has a coach coaching him, and if that coach knows more or that fighter develops quicker or whatever, that's what'll beat you. So I've been around this game for a long time. I train with the best martial arts instructors in the world, and I pass that on to my students, and they get it, and they get better at it. And we have a mixed martial arts mindset with all of our training. So my guys don't train jiu-jitsu, you know, as a goal. They train ground fighting for fighting in MMA. And that changes a lot of stuff where guys come from just a background. They know how to grapple. They know how to armbar. As soon as they get punched in the face, it changes everything. Or we train that all the time. We never do stand-up sparring usually without takedowns involved. So it's an interactive game. And, again, is there areas to improve on? Millions of areas. We're always, you know, trying to get better. I've got Mr. Roy Harris coming up next week for an entire week doing the MMA camp with my guys. And he is the best martial art guy in the world on any subject. He's unbelievable. So I'm always learning and spending money, going places, bringing people in, and my guys know that, and they're always constantly learning and coming back with stuff they saw on YouTube or went to a seminar somewhere. Yeah, just keep learning, keep doing stuff, train with other people, and they know that because that's what I've done. I've always traveled and gone to seminars and brought people in, and they have that same learning mindset, and it's that aggressive mindset of always, every class I'm preaching, finish the fight. If you didn't finish the fight, then you were holding back. There's always timing control issues in a fight where you can take advantage or your opponent can take advantage. And so the strategy comes into there, and what technique you have that'll finish the fight. Is your conditioning up to par to push the pace and all these factors, right? And you learn from that. And, you know, everyone's at different levels, and they see the guys, the brand new guys, the experienced guys. They have a chance to look up at Jordan and see what he's doing right. And they're like, well, if it's working for him and he's just at classes, he doesn't get special training sessions with me. He does group classes. He does the class that every mom and dad comes to for, you know, he's in that exact same class learning. So they have confidence in what we're doing. And, you know, I go to Extreme Couture and train myself sometimes, and I go other gyms. I see what they're coaching, what they're doing. I'm like, well, there's not some miracle thing because they're in Vegas. They're doing an arm bar. They're doing a takedown. They're throwing punches. They're, you know what I mean? So if you come from a gym or a wherever where you don't really have anyone to teach you and you don't know anything, well, then there's a whole bunch of mind-blowing techniques and things being done. But that's not the case here anymore. You know, I mean, 10 years ago, there's a lot of stuff I didn't have a clue about. You know,
now,
luckily I've fought enough to learn from my mistakes and go, you know, look for the answers. So,
And with your experience and obviously your reputation, are those chips good? How important is that now that you have these relationships and ties where you can bring in a guy from Asia or a guy from Brazil or a friend from the East Coast to work with your students?
Yeah, it's awesome. I mean, that's the thing is now it can expand even more. You know, we've got like you said, those connections. TJ Grant is coming out in July for a buddy's wedding in Calgary. He's going to come down and train for a week. That's phenomenal. Jordan's been out there to train with him and help him get ready for fights because Jesse Bongfeld beat TJ Grant on a TKO show back in the day in Montreal, and me and Scott McLean, his coach, became friends, and we keep up those friendships, and we work with each other and try and help each other get better. So that create now we've got this great
you know, cross-country training thing. You know, I go to Extreme Couture and train with Neil Melanson, and, hey, I got a fight card coming up. Oh, let's bring up some of your guys. And it's great, you know, just learning and the camaraderie of the sport and not being, you know, this arrogant, well, we're better, or you're my enemy and all that. Yeah, we're going to fight. You may beat me. That's fine. I may beat you. That's fine. But at the end of the day, we're still friends, and we develop these relationships, and hopefully, we all get better for the sport. And at the end of the day, we had an enjoyable life, and we helped each other be successful financially and achieve more as people. And that's kind of my philosophy for my gym is I don't care if you train me for 5 years, 10 years, or 1 year. I just got to, you know, over the years, I've got a lot of great friends, and that's what's important. So.
Well, and obviously it shows, like you just touched on with your organization, I mean, you've had great fighters from everywhere, you know, and as a promoter, it's got to feel rewarding at this point when you do have gyms as big as Extreme Couture saying, hey, can we get some of our guys on your card?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. And again, I think given that we're in a small market and, you know, we don't have a TV deal and these things, I if I was a millionaire, I could have a lot bigger show and a lot more stuff going on because of the connections I have. I just don't want to lose more money than I lose for being a promoter to make things happen. So if I can afford to bring a guy in from the States or from the out East with all my, friends that have gyms out there in these different places, I would do it. But financially, it's just not feasible. So I try to stick to helping the local Alberta gyms fight and get better, you know, and kind of be a feeder for the feeders, you know, so.
Well, it's been successful. I mean, anybody who's watched your events knows that you guys have, you know, great action-packed cards. Now, I'm curious, where you're putting on your cards, what is your judging rules?
In Lethbridge, they actually use, for the pro fights, they actually use the old Pride rules for scoring. So on the five areas of the five criteria, and it's your total score at the end of three rounds. It's not per round.
I love it. The first time I heard that, I thought that was great that you guys stick to that. We talk about that a lot, and I think for a judge and for a fight, to go that route is much fairer than to go the individual point by point, round by round.
Yeah. My theory on that is, I mean, it's a system that has to be trained, and you have to know it. People always ask, well, you do amateur fights or 2 5-minute rounds, don't you get a lot of draws? Well, no, because we use the same scoring system, so rarely do you get a draw with that type of scoring. Now, a 10-9 scoring system, if you use the criteria, which they say they do, but judges don't look at it that way, if they use the five areas and they pointed it like that, like the Pride rules were, even on a 10-9 system, if that was your criteria to score your 10-9, you'd have a much better judging as well. But they just look at it as who they thought won and who they thought lost. So a guy scores a big takedown. Oh, yeah, that was enough to steal the round. That does not even add up. Because a takedown is not more important than a jab. It's not more important than a leg kick. There's striking, there's grappling, there's ground striking, there's ground grappling, and there's effective aggressiveness. So if those are the areas, that takedown doesn't win you the round if the other guy was dominating and win more. And that's how a 10-9 should be scored as well, but it's not. And that's the problem with the judging. So I always say, I don't care if it's 10-9 or the Pride rules, but do the judges know what they're basing this on? And they don't. And that's, a lot of them don't. So.
Well, Lee, once again, this is an honor, a pleasure as, media fan both, to have someone like you on here to hang out with us for a half hour. Before we run out of time with you and pay commercials, any shout outs, any information you want to give the fans, anything you want to say, please run at it.
As always, just check out our website, rumblethecage.com. Our next big event will be in October, October 26th, here in Lethbridge. Got lots of guys fighting across the country and other shows, and support those shows. It gives people a chance to, do what they do in this sport, and that's what it's all about. I try and support every show I can. Just because it gives my guys experience, and if they can make money at it, bonus for them. So.
Now, will we see you in the cage before the year's end?
I sure hope so.
Okay, good.
I'm testing for my black belt on Monday with Mr. Roy Harris in Jiu-Jitsu. He's coming up from San Diego. And so hoping I pass that, and barring any injuries, I'm really hoping to fight in August. I've got my name in, and they're looking for an opponent right now. So if that opponent accepts the fight and confirms, I will be fighting in August, and I have lots of time to have the best tan I've ever had for a fight. So I am ready.
Right on.
Well, even though he doesn't need a camp, he already told us that. He doesn't. If he just feels that he's in shape, you guys better watch out.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, Lee, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Fans, everybody get out there and check out Lee Means, The Fighting Means on Twitter. You guys can find him, Google him, Facebook him. Get out there and support these guys. It doesn't matter where you live. What they're doing is important, so get out and support them and all local MMA.
Dude, go to GFL.tv and watch Rumble in the Cages, you morons.
That is a great thing, brother. I love you do that. I so love that you do that.
Appreciate it.
Have a good night, guy. Carl,
right,
I know you need to pay bills.
Hey, listen up. If you're in contact sports, the American Dental Association recommends that mouth guards be worn during all heavy contact sports. So do what MMA Meltdown does and contact the best in the biz, Clinch Custom Mouth Guards. Clinch Custom Mouth Guards fabricates custom mouth guards for all professional and amateur sports, mixed martial arts, boxing, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, basketball, football, lacrosse, hockey, as well as many other sports. These mouth guards are for any sport where any form of contact may occur. Get your custom mouth guard today at GetClinch.com. Again, that's GetClinch.com for all of your mouth guard needs.
Holocaust for everybody. Hey, check out our sponsors at Clinch Custom Mouth Guards, Intimidation Clothing, Tank Crimes, Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop, Draco Impact Armor, Pro-Am Belts, Game Changer Clothing, Triumph Fitness, Big T's Nightclub, Crossroader Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, Hike Fight Store, Never Tap, Brawl Base, and 24NLV. We are back and right on time. We're back and on time. Are you guys with me? I'm here.
I'm here.
Oh, there
you
are.
You know
I'm here.
Carl.
I'm gonna get our next guest. Thank you. Oh, nice.
You notice the new logos? I got them up. I'm still waiting for the last two to get done, but I'm waiting
freaking
on a hype fight and. Yeah, isn't
that a pretty cool logo? Pro-AmBelts.com. Frickin' ass kicking belts. Pro-Am belts. Frickin'.
Dude, I had to go
frickin
with that logo. That was sick.
That's a cool word, frickin'. So what's your word of the day today?
Today is Obadiah.
Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm going to leave now, and I'm going to get our guest in queue.
Well, folks, we're going to
continue. And you get Skippy started on this stupid site about his whatever. His word of the day. Now I'm going to be stuck here with this crap all night.
Hey, this is a humdinger of a show.
Shut up. Aaron Hall was wanting to change it from stack to, I got to remember what the hell that was. He was wanting to change the word from stack to something else.
Well, one more guest for tonight's Godfathers of MMA.
Skippy, are you okay?
Yeah, I just took a drink down the wrong pipe. Oh, wow. That rock star, woo, in your lungs, you can feel it.
Better than where it could have been.
Man, this has been a great night of MMA, folks, man. Oh, do we have Mr. Markey with us already?
I'm here, fellas. We're shaking, man.
Hey, welcome back to Madhouse Live.
Come on, guys. Let's get a better intro than that, though, man. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay. The one, the only, the man behind the biggest organization in Canada, probably number two in the whole world, the man who has brought the sport to the forefront of Canadian fans like no one has, and now fans around the world, Mr. Mark Pavlich, how are you doing tonight, sir?
Fellas, we're shaking, man. What's going on, man?
Oh, man.
Not much. Has Edmonton recovered from you blowing the roof off 2 weeks ago?
Yeah. No, listen, man. I haven't recovered. I want to go, man. I just want to put on more shows. That's what people don't understand. It's like I could do it. Our family has the stamina to put on a show every month, right? And that's the number one thing that I seriously need to get into people's heads. I want to take the MFC so much higher. After 13 years, you think to yourself, oh, you know, they must be getting ready to retire and take it easy. It's a complete opposite.
Now, Mark, I've heard, and I just want to find out how much of this is true. I've heard statements that you said that you, A, don't want to do shows so often like maybe the UFC does because you feel like it gets watered down.
Well, not. I don't want to go to the extreme of doing a show every week, right, or three times a month, but I would like to be on a seven-week cycle. That's kind of my mentality, like every 7 weeks, bang, 7 weeks, bang, 7 weeks, bang, just like that, all the way through.
I love it. Now, also, with your 7 weeks, what you're trying to look forward to doing, is any of this involved what you mentioned about on another show about selling part of the company, bringing more financial backing so that you can do these regularly?
Yes, guys, that's the number. You know what, you look at the UFC, right? The Fertitta brothers, the Fertitta brothers saved the UFC, okay? There's no question. Bellator was basically going under, and they got saved by Viacom, right? Well, the MFC sitting in a situation, we're not going under, we're just kind of maintaining being the biggest show in Canada, we're maintaining being one of the biggest shows in the world, but at the same time, as if I really want to make that claim to fame, we have to sell, it's unfortunate, there's no other way around it, we have to sell 49% of the maximum fighting championship, there's no way around it, we can maintain what we're doing now. Listen, guys, it's the same thing, I'm on Access TV, right, which is a phenomenal network, and we're doing great with Access Television. But my big problem is, in my own country, I'm not on live on television. That's becoming a huge problem, right? And you know what's funny? When you say, well, oh, you're on TSN, it's like, you know what? People don't watch it as much when they know the results. You know, in the MMA world, guys, the people know the results 30 seconds later. Why do they want to watch something when they know the results to it already?
It's funny. We've actually had this conversation about a promoter who likes to put his pay-per-views up a week after the event has happened, and he can't understand why he's not. Yeah, he can't understand why they're not taking off. And
bro, same thing with me. I'm on the largest sport network in Canada, but it airs a month later, okay? And you would think, oh, wow, you know, a month later. No, in MMA world, that's – you might as well not even – in my opinion, like I said, I'm on the largest sport network in Canada, but in my opinion, how much longer can you be on a network when everybody knows the results already?
That's my biggest problem, Mark, with trying to watch events that I missed. Skip, you'll be like – dude, you missed this great event. And I'm like, yeah, but I already know. I'd rather just watch the highlight. I mean,
correct.
I already know
I'm,
what happened.
Guys, I'm the same, but that's what I'm trying to get across. I'm the exact same way. I really, this summer, we're really going to reevaluate a lot of things we're doing with this company. And the number one thing is that we have to be, we're on Access TV, which is, you know, I couldn't be any more happy with my guys. But we really have to rethink, and I've never said this out loud, but we're really going to have to think our TSN deal. Because being on tape delay, you know, that long after a show is not beneficial to us. Financially, it's not beneficial. Just to say, oh, we're on the largest sport network in Canada, that's great. But if people aren't tuning in like they should be because it's a month later, what's the point? It's almost pointless.
Yeah, no, that makes – look, you've always been very methodical about your company. And the way you represent it and the way you promote it. And, look, I mean, I know you even had reservations about the whole streaming deal I've read, you know, for your undercard. How much were you happy, unhappy with that? Because I know you had big reservations about it.
I was unhappy. Of course I was unhappy. The streaming started, it cut out, it went on, then it continued on for a while, it cut out, it went back on. I mean, that's the way streaming is, right? I mean, no joke, guys. The other day, you know, which I rarely do, I watched the undercard of the UFC. It cut out 6 times while I was watching it on my computer. So, like I said, it's not just me. It's this, they just don't have the streaming down to a science yet. And for me, it's like, you know, I'm giving that away for free, but I don't want people to think that that's how my product looks when – that's just how streaming is, right? It's like it's very frustrating, and until they got it fully mastered and, you know, perfect, I'm going to continue to do the undercards, streaming it for the fans for free. But I am also apologizing to the fans now that, hey, it's going to cut out.
Now, that's, I mean, you're somebody who likes to have your, you know, anybody who watches your promotions on Access TV, you have things dialed in. Now, that undercard not being dialed in, is that something that stresses you out, or do you hand that off to one of the other team members?
No, guys, don't be mistaken, right? Everything comes through. Listen, everything comes on, you know, through head counsel here. You know what I mean? So, I mean, people, you know, don't be mistaken, man. The posters don't go out. The TV commercial doesn't go out. The way the tickets look, everything. The logo on the spit bucket, if it's crooked, I'm going to say something and tell them to fix it, you know?
I love it. Well, that's important. You have to have your fingers in all the pieces of the pie to be successful.
Yeah, and then you got to put some toes in, too, while you're at it.
Now, I have a question. Now, is it you? Is it your son? Is it the whole family that's doing this amateur deal?
No, we're not doing the amateur deal. The amateur deal was going to be done, and then when I started to do more research about the amateur stuff, I stayed away from it for the sole purpose. You know, the guy in Michigan got killed, right, in the amateur thing.
Yeah.
And when that happened, I got spooked. I was like, I'm not going to jeopardize the Maximum Fighting Championship to get involved with amateur MMA. You know what I mean? Because it's still a gray area. So I kind of stayed away from it. I didn't pursue it.
Okay. Okay, yeah. I just seen a few things and hadn't heard anything in a while. And we're blessed to have, you know, pretty much one of the godfathers of MMA in Canada on tonight, so we get to pick your brain about a bunch of cool stuff.
There's lots of cool stuff going on. But like I said, this summer I'm really going to reevaluate. I hated to say it, that we sat down, and my wife and I, who's my business partner, and discussed that we have to sell 49% of the company if we want to take it to the next atmosphere, you know? And like I said, it's funny because, you know, people talk about us in the same light as they do Bellator, the UFC, Maximum Fighting. You always hear that. The funny part is Viacom and the Fertitta brothers have so much more money than us, and we're still talked about in the same sentences as those shows, and I think that's hilarious because it's beyond David and Goliath, right? I mean, the difference is gigantic financially. Knowledge-wise, it's very close. I don't even think there's a comparison knowledge-wise between the MSC and Bellator. I think we surpass them every which way you could possibly imagine. The only way they can say they're better than us is because Viacom gave them a ton of money to bail them out, right? They were on the brink of disaster.
Yeah, but Mark, it's like Viacom gave them a ton of money to try and be successful, and they keep shooting themselves in the foot with the way they treat fighters.
Well, see, and you know what, guys? I don't know the contractual agreements people have, but I've heard lots of stories about their contracts and how they work and, you know, how they do things. And like I said, I can't really comment too much on – like I said, I know so little about the organization. I have never watched their show. I don't ever – you know what I mean? This is the most I've ever even talked about it. But I'm in that kind of mood now where, you know, I have to start talking about these other shows in comparison of what the Maximum Fighting Championship does in relation to what the Maximum Fighting Championship does. And that's the only reason why I bring it up. Hey, listen, I say the same thing. I think my TV network – should stop covering the UFC as much and cover the Maximum Fighting Championship more. That's just my opinion, right? I love my network. I've always promoted them. But, you know, I see, you know, people get joy happy with them and they're not even on their network. I'm the longest running show at Access TV, right? I do anything for Access TV. And I think that they should cover us more. They should, I don't care how they want to do it, but one way or another, promote the Maximum Fighting Championship, not just when the shows are on, but when the shows are off.
So would you like?
I totally agree.
So it's something like, you know, like a behind the scenes, like maybe a follow a fighter or two on a build up through camps, maybe broke down into four parts. Something like that.
Listen, we've done stuff like that in the past, right? And that's not a problem. We've done stuff like that. But I'm saying is, you know, when they're doing Inside MMA, you know, do more stuff about the MFC, when they're doing, you know, like I said, this is just suggestions. They're doing a great job with the network. But this is a time in the business where, you know, it's I gotta start speaking out, man. I gotta start speaking out. The MFC has to be bigger, you know. I'm not just gonna be the biggest show in Canada. That's not enough for me, man. I'm telling you, I can't go on like that. That's nothing to me anymore. I have to be the number two show in the world. I have the knowledge, I have the mindset, I have the work ethic, and the only way it's gonna happen, like it happened for the UFC, like it happened for Bellator, someone's gonna have to purchase 49% of the Maximum Fighting Championship. So I can go and fight on an equal playing field.
So, once again, you know, the rumors flying around. Will this be the reason why you're supposedly going to take the summer off?
No, I'm taking the summer off because I've never shook it off in 13 years, right? I mean, I'm tired, you know? Our family's tired because we just keep rolling along, and I have an option to, you know, maybe for an August show, and if I don't know in the next, you know, 3 to 4 to 5 days, then I'm going to, you know, wait till the October 4th show. And that's simple as that. You know, and probably do a show in November and call it a year. But like I said, you know, you would think these people that come along and put all these money into these shows, these new shows that come along, and the people that are running the show have zero knowledge on how to promote a show, how to put it together. And you would think they would see a show like mine after 13 years with two television deals jump on the bandwagon.
Now, okay, since I'm blessed to have you here and I can squash a lot of rumors, is it true that the August show's in the United States?
No.
Okay. I just love forums and the way people talk, and we're finally getting to talk to the man himself. Yeah, the rumor was your August show was in a casino in Florida, but that's why I'm asking.
Casino, but not in Florida. But you know what's funny? The less I talk, I don't go on forums anymore. It's been years and years, and I don't go on any of those places. And it's funny because people tell me, oh, did you hear what this person said? Or do you hear this person said? And you know what I tell everybody? Even if people talk bad, I don't care anymore. And if people talk good, I don't care anymore either. You know what I'm saying? It's different. If the people like yourself in the media talk positive about me, I'm very appreciative of that. Please don't get that mistaken, right? But when just random people talk crap, I can't do anything about that anymore. I can't. When other promoters talk crap about me, people go, aren't you mad? I'm like, no, I don't care. I don't even know those people. I've never even met them. Right? So for me, it's like, that's why I don't talk about many other promotions, because I don't watch their show. I never hear anybody talking about their show. So what am I going to say bad about them? I don't know anything about them. I could care less what they do. But they sure spend a lot of time talking about me.
Mark, now we're coming off a big show for Maximum Fighting Championship. But actually, what I want to talk to you about for a second is what went down right before the show went off. And I would like to know who finally had the balls to call and tell you that Chris Barnett would be unable to fight. Was it the doctor, or did his manager finally grow a pair and decide that it was maybe something that he should
You know, it's unfortunate, because I've done really good business with Mickey Dubberly in the past, who's his manager, and Mickey has done great business with me before. So this was an unfortunate incident, because he did drop the ball in this scenario, and he should have just said, you know what, I dropped the ball. But instead, he tried to defend himself. He called our office. He did, you know, apologize for the mistake and the rest of the things that happened. But, you know, we've never had these type of problems before. And this is the first time anything like this kind of weirdness has happened in a very long, you know, MMA career. And you know, like I said, Mickey's a guy that we're going to continue. Well, you know, this is a small industry, you know what I'm saying? So I'm going to end up probably doing business with him again someday, and, you know, it's just unfortunate that this happened.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was a very big moment, I thought, for the MFC to be headlining with a heavyweight title fight, and I also felt that it was a really big moment for people around North America to see what Shmialino Rama was capable of doing.
Listen to me when I tell you this. It's not even about what he's capable of doing. The way he handled the whole situation about the title fight not happening was absolutely amazing. He called me and was worried about myself and my wife and my son and my family about, you know, how, because he knows what type of work ethic we have and the amount of passion we put into this sport. And he was worried about us and how we were doing. Can you imagine that? A kid at 21 years old, ranked 35th in the world, number one in Canada, instead of, like, complaining and whining and the rest of the stuff, no, he just called us to see how we were doing. You know what I'm saying? This is a guy with so much class and so much poise that it's going to be scary. Scary. He is 6-0 right now, and don't be surprised when he's MFC champ one day. Don't be surprised. You know what I mean? He's a very special human being, and I'm not even talking about mixed martial arts.
Yeah, no, I think he comes from a great camp there at Independent, and I get to talk to his boxing coach really frequently, and I hear just constantly nothing but, like, positive things. More even about him away from the fight game, just like what you mentioned, than really in the fight game.
Yeah, like I said, I encourage sponsors, I encourage anybody, you know, to really look at this kid, because there's something really, really, you know, profound about how he does stuff. And, you know, he's just a class guy all around. Like I said, I don't care. Like I said, if I like somebody, I like them. That's it. I'm on there. You know, I just, that's how they are. You know, it's funny. Someone said this the other day, you know, they say, Mark, you're not a fan of fighters. You know, I said, I respect fighters. I said, the promoters that are fans of fighters go broke because they overpay fighters, and they end up going broke because they're fans, not promoters, right? I do this for a living. So I respect all fighters, okay? But I'm not a fan, right? Rama's different. I'm a fan of him as a human being. Not as a fighter, I respect him. He has so much talent and the rest of the stuff. But just something about him. It just, like I said, I remember people when they're at their worst, not when they're at their best. So when the fight, a championship fight like that cancels, and he called our family and worried how we were doing, not worried about himself, that shows me something about someone's character.
Now, that night we also debuted the bantamweight division in the Maximum Fighting Championship. How happy were you with the performance that both Anthony Berchek and Ryan Benoit put on that night?
Guys, I lost my shit, okay? I lost it, okay? I was losing it. My laptop was flying around at ringside. I was on my laptop doing work and while the fight's going on, and I was, like, losing it. Like, I couldn't have dreamt that fight to come out any better. You know what I'm saying? And those guys, you know, once again, when you say, oh, you're going to put these two guys out here, you sell the fight like what they're going to do, and then they actually do it, that's a dream come true for a guy like me.
Yeah, because they really, I mean, that was like the biggest hyped fight I think I'd heard in a long time. And the, I wouldn't say the hatred for each other, but the animosity was thick. And you could cut it with a knife. And then they
guys, it wasn't
that
a hatred.
Much build up and then perform afterwards, after all that, and putting that much pressure was phenomenal, I thought.
It wasn't a hatred. It was a disdain, right? They had a disdain for each other, and that's even better than hatred, you know? Because you can hate someone, and there's a very fine line between love and hate, correct? But when you have a disdain for someone, it's like you just can't even be in the same room as them, right? That is what Burchak and Benoit had for each other, and then they were hugging each other when the fight was over, you know? Like they had such a respect for each other, and then. It wasn't 10 minutes after, and Benoit called me and said, Mark, I want to fight him in a rematch. I hate him. I want to kill him. You know, it's awesome. I love these guys.
I know. And then, like, Benoit was like, he did a whole other social media campaign angling for a rematch.
Yeah, it's insanity. Like, and it's like, you know, it's one of those things that it reminds me of Ali – Joe Frazier kind of thing, you know, in boxing, where it just never ended. It just doesn't end.
But that's, you got to feel great having these two guys open up that division, knowing both their talent level, but also both of their social media savvy level, which is something you're going to be proud of.
Crazy. I mean, if I had 20 guys in my roster that did what they do, can you imagine what would happen?
Oh, yeah. You know, so, you know, excluding, you know, let's not talk rematch, because I think that both the guys need to have some other fights before we see them personally. But do you feel that the rest of the competition that you're going to bring in can live up to what basically the golden rule they set for that division?
Probably not, guys. Like, honestly, like, I mean, I wish I could sound like a promoter and say, yeah, for sure, you know, but no. I mean, I think there's something seriously mentally wrong with Benoit, and in a good way, but I think there's seriously something wrong with him in the fact that he's a guy that's going to, you know, he's just so obsessive of a human being that I wouldn't want to fight him. Do you know what I'm saying? I just wouldn't want to. There's no quit in him. There's no I'm going to tap out. There's none of that kind of stuff. But he is seriously mentally different than most fighters I've ever seen, you know? He was in the dressing room concussed, okay? Like concussed. And he was sitting there. One of his eyes was hanging off, and he's like, I want to fight him again. He's going crazy, man. It was like, this guy was like Freddy Krueger, man. I'm like, oh, my God, this is crazy. And you know what the worst part is? Burchak is the same way. Like, he'll fight anybody. Don't even tell me who it is. I don't care. This is a rarity in our sport right now. Do you understand? This is something that I just, you know, I dreamt of, and it happened.
No, well, man, we've got to really watch Anthony's career over, like, the last 12 to 14 months. And when we saw that you had made the move to bring him in and open that division, we knew that great things were sure to follow.
Yeah, I didn't. Like, in a million years, I never thought they would make a fight like that, not to that level. And when they did, you know, it was like I was so happy at the end, and I was praising them, and I couldn't stop praising them, man. I was just like, thank you, thank you, thank you. I just love when people. And listen, let's not forget Sam Alvey, right? And you know, his great performance, Luke Harris's great performance, you know, that type of thing.
Kurt Southern had a dominant,
yeah,
performance.
Unbelievable performance.
I mean, even the Alan Hope fight, I really thought Paul might beat him in that fight, but
yeah,
I was totally caught off guard.
I love that fight too, because, you know, I put two meat and potato guys on to start the telecast, and I knew they were going to do that. I knew they were going to just turn it into a street fight. And once in a while, we need to see stuff like that.
No, isn't it funny how sometimes you do need that?
I listen, I don't know about you guys, but I just don't mind it when I see two guys want to beat the shit out of each other and punch each other in the face. And let's just call it what it is. It's a fight, okay? So sometimes there's a little bit too much MMA in the landscape of MMA now, and there's not enough fighting. And when I see that kind of stuff, I just go, thank you. That's why I love this sport. You can dissect it any way you want. But I really want to see two guys that go in there and beat the hell out of each other. That's what I want to see. Call me a hopeless romantic, but that's what I want to see.
But that's, that's something that you've consistently brought onto your platform is fighters who fight. Fighters
Correct.
Who go in to kill and get that finish. You don't have a lot of the quote-unquote lay and prayer kind of fighters in your
Not anymore, guys. Not anymore, guys, but remember, there was a time when I did, and now those days are over, and it's like we're so careful now when we sign guys. We, are very, very careful.
Now, that's what I was hoping to get around to. You get guys today coming out of college that, they're division, champions. They've got all these multiple titles, 300-fight win streak. They call you up, and they say, I want to fight for you. But then you've got a guy who's maybe a Thai boxer who's had a 22-4 record and been training in BJJ for 6 years. How do you determine?
That's cool. That's a great analogy because that's how we do it, And we do a three-prong system where my son, myself, and Scott Zur kind of look at a fighter, and we all kind of, it's the point now where you need three S's or the guy doesn't get signed. I look at it one way. I look at it, we all kind of looking for same thing, and then I send the video to my son, I send the video to Scott Zur, and then it's three S's, man. You don't get in the MFC. That's as simple as that.
Yeah, this ain't America's Got Talent where you get two little red marks and then you get to move
exactly.
on.
Exactly. You need all
no.
three. That's exactly right. You need all three to say yes because we can't take any chances anymore. The days of the Antonio McKees and the things like that, we can't take chances like that anymore.
I agree. And how often, do you guys butt heads on somebody where one of the three says no and the other two say yes and down the road you find to know was the right answer?
Yeah, no, there's no really debating the fact, right? We all kind of know now what we're looking for, and it's a combination of there's a combination, right? It's a combination of, not just the guy can fight, not just that the guy's exciting, not that the guy's a finisher, but does the guy Twitter? Does the guy Facebook? Does the guy YouTube? Does the guy, all those things are a factor now.
Now, Mark, you're a guy with your finger on the pulse of many things in Canada. How upset are the Canadian people that not a single Canadian team is left in the race for Lord Stanley's Cup?
Well, you know what the worst part about it is? My Detroit Red Wings just lost in overtime to the Chicago Blackhawks. So I'm very disappointed. But listen, to be honest with you, as disappointed as I could possibly be about hockey. You know what I'm saying? So let's call it like it is.
A Lane and Frey fight is more disappointing to you than the Red Wings losing.
Correct. I'm not going to lose sleep over it. You know what I'm saying? And they're my team, and I'm not going to lose sleep over it. That's how much I pay attention to hockey.
What can we maybe expect to headline MFC 38 True, or no? What is it? Reality Strikes. I think is that the name of that
Which one? What are you talking?
The upcoming 38. MFC 38.
We're gonna. What's coming up for that one?
Yeah, behind it's enemy been, lines.
Behind correct. That one's gonna be. The best of the best of the roster is going to be on that show. That's just how we're going to do that one. And like I said, when you don't, it all depends. Like I said, if we're going to do the August show, then that October show will be, quite different and, things like that. I mean, we're going to know it a lot more in the next 4 to 5 days.
Okay, Mark. So if things don't go that way, where are you going on vacation?
I don't want to go on vacation. I want to stick around my home, right? I might, you know, buzz out to Vegas or Vancouver, Canada, because it's beautiful out that way. But, you know, I'm just going to stay and work, and, you know, that's what I do and be around. I have a beautiful home, so I'm going to, you know, stay around there for once in a while and, you know, learn how to barbecue or something.
Now, if you go to Vancouver, is it just you and Manon, or will you take the kids with you, or will you kick them off and tell them to go the other direction?
My son lives on the other coast by Detroit now, and my daughter's still with us, so, you know, she always comes and hangs with us. She has cool parents, right? So she's one of the rare, you know, kids that wants to hang out with their parents.
That is true. If I had more tablets for my dad, I would probably be hanging out with my family more.
Yeah, you ask, I mean, my son, he's almost 25 years old, and you ask him, he'll tell you the same thing. When, you know, he likes hanging with his dad, we go to Vegas, and he has fun, and, you know, we enjoy ourselves, and our family's always been like that. We're very fortunate and very blessed, you know, that we all kind of, like, love, we do enjoy each other's company, we love hanging out together, and, you know, that's something, that has nothing to do with MMA, that has to do with, you know, that we're very fortunate.
Yeah. And I better clarify before people in my family are listening, I do enjoy hanging out with my own father. I don't want that to be misconstrued there.
Well, Mark, you know, I really appreciate you taking this time to join the Canadian Godfathers of MMA show and to squash all these rumors we're reading. So if there's anything you'd like to say, get out there, any information, please feel free to take your time.
No, I just, once again, I encourage everybody to go to the Maximum Fighting Twitter page, at Maximum Fighting, and then, of course, my personal one, which is always extremely entertaining, at Mark Pavlich. And you know, go to our website, MaximumFighting.com, and like I said to people, we're going to be in the laboratory for the next month or two, really kind of putting together more stuff and kind of plotting our, you know, plotting our path for the next 10 years.
Well, I wish you the best of luck, and I can't wait to hear some of the big news coming out at the end of summer from you guys.
Well, thanks for having me on, fellas. I really appreciate it. Like I said, man, your guys' opinion does matter to me. So those are things that I got to make very clear to people. Guys that have always supported the Maximum Fighting Championship, I know you guys don't have alternative motives for other things in life. You guys call it like it is. And, you know, if we do great, you commend us. If we drop the ball, it's probably warranted, you know, when you say stuff. So I'm not immune to that kind of stuff, and I'm not above, you know, that type of stuff either.
Well, it's funny. That's why we asked you about the stream, because a couple of my buddies are like, there's no way you'll ask them about that because you had problems with it. And I'm like, why? You're one of the guys we can talk to openly on this show.
Yeah, but I didn't. But and I told you I didn't like it from the beginning. I told you that it cuts out, it chops in, chops out, and I'm honest about it. It's like, if you know, people. But I could sit here and you know, tell you like other promoters do and go, well, yeah, man, it was fantastic. It was like, no, it wasn't. It wasn't fantastic, right? Why are we going to pretend? You know, it's like, come on, man, you're all smart guys. You know it wasn't fantastic. And, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to be done to it, a lot.
Mark, what outcome on MFC 37 surprised you the most?
I was surprised how easily Kurt Southern beat Mukai Muromo. You know, I was surprised how the main event fight, how the level they took it to. I was surprised Sam Alvey, you know, put it on Jay Silva in his own game, standing up. I mean, I was surprised about those type of things.
Interesting.
Hey, look, Mark, definitely, I know you got stuff to do tonight, so enjoy the rest of your night, and thank you again, sir. We look forward to having you on again.
Thanks, fellas. You take care now and keep it rolling.
Will do, Mark.
Okay, bye-bye.
Man, he is always one of my favorite guests to have on here. I mean, I love it because we can talk to him about anything.
Dude, I had to drink 3 Rockstars before Mark got on the show tonight just to be ready to try and keep up. Like, my heart's sitting there going, like, I feel like I'm about to have a heart attack. Like, I'm sitting, like, I'm, like, ready to go run 16 miles. I'm sitting here, I'm like, my pool game's going to be like shit tonight because I'm so wired.
Dude, but wasn't that great when we asked him about the rest of the division, his honesty at 135. He's like, there's a chance anybody else could do that. You know, that was great honesty from the guy. Can't go wrong. Anybody out there, Maximum Fighting Championships, you guys got to get out there and support them. Get out there and watch your events on Access TV. If you're in Canada, and we heard him say it is a casino in the States, but it wasn't Florida. So
he didn't say it was a casino in the States. He just said it was a casino, but not Florida. That could be a casino in Quebec. You know, they do have casinos in Canada. Tell him, Carl.
Well, I think he was talking about the United States. From what I was reading, it was supposed to be a casino in the U.S. Either way, I can't wait to see what they do this summer while they're hiding under, you know, the radar, building up that lab. Everybody token right now? Is it time?
I think so. That's kind of a problem sometimes. With Carl not being on the three-way, sometimes we have that happen. Dude, so what a wild night, dude. I mean, I think that Bill and Lee are very similar personalities, but then you look at Mark and he's just so gung-ho about it all, you know. It's just such a different vibe, but it's like the same, like they all respect the game the same way, you know?
Yeah, and hey, speaking of the three-way deal with the screen, Carl, did you get that email I sent you today about WordPress? Isn't that cool? Not only that, once they add Skype to the BlackBerry, which we'll all be set up like champions.
Yeah, okay, the people don't really care about you talking shop right now on the fucking radio show, bro.
Oh, I apologize, mister. I got 45 rock stars in me, and now I'm going to go shoot a crappy game of pool.
The people want to know that. That's shit that people want to know. They don't care about WordPress. They want to know if one of the hosts is going to die of a heart attack on the show so they can keep listening. You know,
well,
I mean,
it
how
could be me with
somebody...
my cholesterol. It's at 1680.
Yeah. I tell you,
dude actually...
go down and get some Lipitor, homie. Go get some Lipitor. Derek will tell you. Lipitor is the answer for everything.
I went in the other day and the doctor said my cholesterol looked like 10-weight 40.
He said, you need to move to Canada, son. Eat a paleo diet. Caribou.
Caribou.
Tumbleweeds. And cocksuckers.
Put your hands up, cocksuckers. I'm going to get that on a shirt for Carl.
Who do you think has a bigger impression on Canadian MMA?
Shut up, Lavaki. Carl's talking.
Sorry,
I just wanted to give a shout out to Aaron Hall for helping me track down. I didn't push mute. For helping me track down Bill Mahood. That was a great interview with Bill. First time we've ever had him on live. Great guest. Great insight.
No, Carl, we had Bill back when, like, episode 25 of 28, I thought.
No, I don't think so.
I thought we had him on a show, him and Joe Wooten, back, like, in the early 20s.
Ooh, I don't think so. Maybe. I'd have to go back in the archives and take a look, but...
Maybe we just talked about it because he was doing the commentating for WCFC.
Yeah, we've had a few conversations about Bill Mahood for sure.
Yeah.
Who the hell was it? I think it was Aaron Hall, actually, that was telling us about something that was going on at one time with something they were
saying.
He
had Bill Mahood at Sport Fight. Remember?
Yeah, Sport Fight.
The Ryan Healy, Eric Kelly card?
Yeah.
That's right. Big shout out to Aaron Hall. If everything goes good, he'll be joining
your mother.
Us next Tuesday with Team Quest's own Liv Von Plattenberg, the T-Rex, and Amy Caldwell.
Why are you booking these Tuesday shows?
That should be a Wednesday.
You just said next Tuesday.
Oh, did I? Well, I meant next Wednesday. Now you got me all confused. Made me have to go look it up.
It wasn't hard, was it, Carl?
No. Nope. Dripping water can confuse me. What's the, yeah, we've got them the fourth. What's the fourth?
Your dog's mother.
Oh, it is a Tuesday. No, it should be the fifth. should be that one.
You better figure it out. Scooter.
Man, now I got to call people and figure out what I told them. Damn. I hate
no,
that.
But Carl, who do you think has a bigger impression on Canadian MMA of the three guys we had on tonight? Or do they have different impressions? Like who do you think has made a bigger mark?
Oh, that is a tough question. You know, I think they've all done their own thing in their own areas. You know, Bill Mahood's really behind the scenes. Lee Meehan doing as much training and helping as he does there. And with Mark and his promoting, you know, they've all, you know, hit the top in all three of those categories, I would say.
So if there was to form, like, a board that oversaw MMA in the country, would you think it should be a requirement to have those three on it? Since Bill would understand, like, the bureaucracy side of the sport, Mark understands the promoter, like, the promotions aspect. Lee also has a understanding in that, but then Lee also is hands-on with training athletes that perform around the country.
Yeah, I think those three would be great. There's a lot of other guys that would be great in that realm as well, though. But Bill Mahood, for sure, I would say for sure Bill Mahood. And, you know, if Lee and Mark could find time, I'm sure Bill's really busy too, though, don't get me wrong, but he's so much in the shadows you don't hear about him. I think that would be great for the sport up here.
See, I think that's some of the best thing is to have guys like Bill Mahood in the bureaucratic aspect of the sport, because while, you know, there are things that happen in the light of the game that kind of hold it back, I think there's more things that happen in the shadows of the game that can hold it back. And having guys like Bill Mahood who have been, you know, at all levels of the game and have an understanding of how it should be going and with the best interest of everybody in, you know, in consideration.
Mm-hmm. So,
what did we lose, Skippy? Hey, Skippy, are we using words bigger than your Android app helps you out with? Or
I'm just looking at them. That's our.
Oh, Scooter.
Hey, look, why do you guys got to pick on people who took short buses to school and wore helmets? I mean, it's not
because,
fair.
Because, dude. Low-hanging fruit.
Low-hanging fruit. Oh, shit. I like that one.
What do you guys think about Nick Diaz announcing War MMA 1 will be going down June 22nd?
That's old news. We knew about that a month ago.
Shut your mouth. The zombies are just finding out.
Oh, well, all you zombies, we knew about that a month ago. It's funny, dude, because that's like the Jessica I Kareem the Damn fight. If you look on Madhouse.com, MMAMadhouse.com, when we posted it, it was 18 days before NAAFS said anything. I was looking at their release, and I was looking at ours. And I was like, I wasn't supposed to hit send until I was told to by somebody. They were like, I'll give you a date when you can release it. Well, instead of hitting save draft, I hit published, and I went back and looked, and it was like, seriously, like 14, 18 days, something like that, before it was announced. How we roll.
What, have you been hanging out with Chris Gregory? That's a lot of mistakes.
No, well, hey, look, I know I was told not to say anything, but, I mean, I didn't mess up like retarded like Chris Gregory does.
That's probably true. It's hard to do that.
Hey, and by the way, the first fan who can tell me if Nick Newell is a flyweight or a featherweight at World Series of Fighting and can prove it one way or the other, I will give you a big thank you.
And a slap on the bum.
No. Because if it's like, no, just no. We're not slapping anybody, no.
I got some people on the list that need to get slapped. I'm still waiting for an apology from Jeff McConnell.
I'm still waiting an apology from Jeff Hogan.
Really?
Well,
I'm sure he's listening in. I'm sure he's listening in.
He took a fit to our fight. Carl, do you have any problem with us naming the fight me versus Jeff called 1954 Meets My Fist?
No.
It's going
to
be like.
Why
like
do
Back
I feel like I'm on
part
like
four?
Why do I feel like I'm on 20 Leagues Under the Sea right now? I keep hearing this. It sounds like a fucking submarine sonar pinging out. Yeah. Like, are we on the hunt for Red October here? Is Sean Connery going to make an appearance?
Carl could play Sean Connery.
I was trying to confuse Skippy with some water dripping.
Oh,
dude,
man,
it was
just
for
fucking
a
with me,
there.
Carl. Thanks.
No, sorry.
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for. You guys say something, and then I act. It's like the Kung Fu Fighters last week.
Did you hear that we booked a fight for Skippy and Jeff last night?
I saw something about something, yes.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I want this publicly stated that I'm pissed off that Ensure is his sponsor all of a sudden. That's kind of wrong. How do you get a sponsor in 24 hours from Ensure? I'll never know. Oh, you know I got mad love for you, Jeff, but I'm going to push you over with your walker. Oh, man.
Fuck
hey,
you, Baldy. Oh, man, I will beat you like the neighbor kid. Oh, I'm going to need counseling after this.
Hey, you know, I hate to publicly state this, but you're going to be just like one of my cigarettes. I'm going to smoke you so fast with my fist that I'm going to flip your butt away.
This is not a blowjob contest, so I don't know what you got in mind there. You probably win that one, but, you know, you're dreaming, man.
You
can't even reach me. I'm short, and you can't even reach me.
Dude, I'm.
What are you going to
sit on you? It's over.
Sit on me?
Give me a break. That's all I'm going to do. I'm gonna come sit on you, and you're going to be like,
you know how many
you're going to chat to verbal.
Do you know how many short, chubby kids I put in counseling in their life?
Yeah, but those short,
home.
Chubby kids
the
did not
next
come
day
in with an 87-9 prison fight record.
Yeah, fuck prison. This ain't prison.
Hey, would you like to talk about how you got that sponsorship so quickly?
Well, people are lining up to sponsor me. What are you kidding?
So, how much
no
is Ensure giving you? Like 4 cases of Ensure?
Yeah, that and that $25,000 every 6 months.
Oh, well, so you're getting a standard sponsor agreement.
Oh,
yeah,
dude,
Jeff McConnell said.
Jeff McConnell, yeah. Jeff McConnell must have hooked you up.
He's amazing.
How you doing tonight?
I think he invented MMA, I think.
I don't know. Apparently I was delusional in thinking that Misha really got the fight because she's a better TV draw than Sarah McMahon, but
dude,
seems to be
there's
a
rumors going dude, there's rumors going around that the cat's not even truly hurt that bad. So I don't know.
Oh, she's hurt.
I believe she is.
No, she's
I
out.
Believe
she's
is.
Out 6 to 9 months. Tore ACL.
She's in the hospital.
Our pitcher
already
on
had
Twitter
surgery and everything.
Laying in the hospital.
Yeah, she's already had surgery. She's.
I mean,
dude,
you guys, who's a bigger conspiracy guy than me? That you?
Nobody.
That any of you? That any of you know?
Eric.
And what am I
Eric.
Saying with this? Is this a fucking conspiracy? No, it's not. I should know.
No, I'm just saying when it first happened, a lot of people were like, "This is a fake injury. They're doing this just to get Tate in there because Tate's a bigger draw." And she
why
is TV wise.
Why would Kat do that? She's just gonna give up her everything so that they can have Misha on? Fuck that. She'd be like, you kidding me? I beat her ass.
I didn't write it. I didn't write it. I'm just saying. But that's truthfully, it's why she got picked over McMahon. It's because they want Ronda to keep the title, and they know that Misha will sell a lot
dude,
of...
Dude, why is everybody immediately writing Misha off? Let's not forget that Misha Ronda was Fight of the Year 2 years ago. I mean, and now everybody talks like, oh, Misha sort of fucking has been. Like, get the fuck out of here. She just fucking competed at, what, Auburn Dobby? Was that the one it was, Jeff?
No, she's done a lot of them, though. No, it was a submission challenge, ASC, but she's done a few of them. She's competing regularly.
And
training
with
hard,
guys.
She's learning new stuff. Yeah, with guys.
Now,
which is good practice
honest,
for Ronda.
Whether she wins or loses, do you guys believe that it's only a matter of time until Sarah McMahon steps in and it's hers?
I don't think that it's necessarily hers, but I do think it's just a matter of time until it's her turn for some attention.
If Kat and Ronda was strictly headlining a pay-per-view, Sarah McMahon would have got the shot.
Yes.
But Ronda Rousey and Kat Zingano are headlining the fucking Ultimate Fighter. Where, and I'm going to say this publicly, where unfortunately for Sarah McMahon, she's too quiet, she's too humble, and she's too focused on training to draw the rating that Fox wants for this fucking show. This fucking show is not about the hardcore fans. This fucking show is not about anybody that will, like, know who Sarah McMahon is. This show is to satiate the appetite of the Zuffa zombie casual fan that for some reason UFC puts more importance on than anybody else. That's why. That's what this all boils down to. That's the bottom fucking line. Is that this is headlining the Ultimate Fighter, not a pay-per-view. If it's a pay-per-view, I would put 90% Sarah McMahon gets the title shot. But it's Ultimate Fighter.
About the fight.
Yeah, it's about the television show. Like Jeff said, on every fucking week, they need viewers. Ronda hates Misha. Yep. Misha hates Ronda. Brian Caraway hates Ronda. Ronda and Misha hate Brian Caraway. You know?
Half of America does now.
But now, let's talk about the coaching aspect of the show now, because it's going to be completely different, obviously, with Tate bringing in. Who does she bring in? Does she go after friends? Does she bring in-house? What do you think she's going to do?
I
hadn't even thought about that.
I bet you'll see people from the MMA lab. I don't think you'll see anybody from Northeast Washington.
I don't
think you'll see from Northeast Washington. I would think you would see people more from the I-5 corridor before you would see Northeast Washington. I mean, maybe you'll see Sam or somebody like that, but probably not.
I think
Sam,
you might see. No, it would be Rick Little, who's her coach now, I guess. That's who I think would be there, who has no business there. But you could see Dennis Allman. Very easily could see Dennis Allman, Benji Raddick. Ivan Salivary, she trains over there too. Could be someone from there.
Could we see maybe an alpha male cast?
No. It depends how...
I think Ryan Faber might make a few special visits.
Well, no, yeah. I mean, like, she's got... I mean, he's down there. He's got a phenomenal striking coach. It is a smaller weight class. They do perform better with the smaller talent in weight-wise, between 55 and 25 out of that camp. That's the only reason
I'm
bringing
it up. Where she trained.
Yeah,
where she trained when she got the title.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying is maybe she goes home there knowing what they've done and been able to do with that weight class over the last 2 years, 3 years.
Yeah, it's pretty nice to go back to that sure thing.
Dude, they've got one of the best striking coaches for MMA today, man. I mean, he's a great, great coach. You know, I mean, all the coaches are. Don't get me wrong, folks. I mean, there's 100 great striking coaches. So there's plenty out there to choose from. But I'm just curious. You know, honestly, I'm not concerned so much about Ronda, because I don't believe Ronda's going to do anything but go hire four or five people who want to get their names sold well, and that's it.
No, she's not.
You know?
She's going to go straight over to Nick and Nate and be like, why don't you guys come on over, Caesar? Gil?
I don't know.
No, that ain't happening. Dana White's not going to let a bong festival go for 8 weeks.
This is the Ultimate Fighter, bro. He's got, dude,
yeah,
he wants ratings.
Anything for
they
TV.
They all want ratings.
Yep.
Dude, can you imagine having Caesar Gracie fight team on one side and Team Alpha Male on the other side? It could get loco.
Okay, Carl.
And then Brian Caraway, who Nate Diaz hates, Brian Caraway, and would love to get his hands on that guy.
Yeah.
Ain't happening.
Dude, I bet you Nate makes an appearance. If Brian Caraway is on the show, Nate Diaz will be on the show. Yes!
That'd
you heard
cool.
it here first, people. Dude, that was, dude, just imagine if Nate got his hands on
Shut
Brian.
Up so he can pay bills!
You know he wants to tap that.
Let's give our sponsor a shout-out while we're still on.
Who doesn't?
How about... course, Clinch custom mouth guards, intimidation clothing, Tank Crimes, Central Oregon Trike, Vision Smoke Shop, Draco Impact Armor, Pro-Am Belts, Game Changer Clothing, Triumph Fitness, Big T's Nightclub, Crossroader Clothing, Ink Tank Tattoo, Hype Fight Store, Never Tap, Brawl Base, and 24 in LV. There we go.
Jeff.
10 seconds.
I got to ask
10 seconds.
Hey, and everybody, you guys are going to want to hear this. This is about Amateur World Championships. Jeff, how much of the show did you listen to tonight? Because Bill Mahood mentioned that next year the International MMA Federation is looking to hold world titles for the championships for amateurs in Vegas.
Sounds cool. I think it's going to take a long time to be legit with good attendance and good representation from everywhere, but I like the idea.
Well, dude, it's funny because the international organization, if you go onto their websites, Max Kickboxing Organization is one of the founding members, so I've followed them for some time. They outside of America, they have a ridiculously heavy presence throughout Africa, throughout Asia, throughout the Middle East, and throughout Europe, and in Australia as well. So I personally, for one, would love to see a group of 30 or 40 fighters, you know, from around the world come to the States and at an amateur level and see where everyone really lies.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I hope it works.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to go. It's a lot of money. It's a lot of money bringing people in from other countries. How does it get paid for?
But
you know,
unlike America, you have other countries that look at combat sports in a completely different light and definitely throw their support behind it because it's not only a cultural, but it's become a sport to them.
Sure. That's true.
You know, so I'm... Go ahead, Lafarge.
No, go ahead, buddy. I want you to finish.
You know, I was going to say, if you look at, you know, just we'll just take Dare MMA. I mean, they've got the largest chain of resorts in Asia as their main sponsor. You know, I mean, that's insane, you know?
Yeah.
That'd be like having the Hilton sponsor, you know, Primal Fight 6.
Can you set that up?
I wish.
Actually,
we'd all be going to
Coeur
d'Alene, Idaho. We'd move that car to Coeur d'Alene so we could stay in that hotel out on the lake.
You get paid by Cage Warrior. Send him there instead.
Oh, okay.
Like Intimidation did.
Dude, Intimidation, our proud sponsor, sponsoring Pacific Northwest events, Cage Warrior Combat 5. That's
pimp. Pretty cool.
Dude, it's going to be awesome to be there.
Oh, wait. I guess not everybody can experience that.
He could if he wanted to.
Well, not now, dude. Definitely. Not my wife's car breaking down today, too. Fuck.
What?
Day. Yeah, her car took a shit today. I don't know what's wrong. I got to take it to the shop.
We're going to have to bring fights. I bet the next fight that you go to is going to be the one where I kick your ass. That's the next fight that you'll actually see in person. The toe take match.
September 29th.
And you cut your toes off beforehand. What's with the date? What's with the September 29th? Why do I have to wait so long to kick his ass?
Because
after all this shit talking, I don't want to wait.
No, that's when Brian Jones and Felipe's next card is, and so... That's the they wanted to promote the match and have you guys main event and really put this rivalry to bed.
Yeah, I think that they're pretty uppity, pretty straight laced, and I think all the F bombs and all and probably the shank will really throw their audience. I don't know how well that's going to go over on their show. There's other shows though. I think that it would work for.
Like that one in Walla Prison?
Yeah. Yeah, we could do a series out there. It could be like a tournament over multiple dates.
Winners get paroled.
Yep. Losers lose a toe.
Now, did you hear what Skippy said? It was going to be his technique and his tactic. He was going to have all of his toes removed.
That is a great idea. Because him already being so light on his feet and so quick, that will help a lot.
Dude, did you guys read that? Hey, before we hang up because Carl's got to go. Hey, Nick Diaz, first of all, will be using a ring, not a cage, and he's banning elbows.
Good.
They'll be banned from all pro and amateur events.
Good, because they ruin fights. They ruin fights. They just cut people.
Permitting elbows on the ground encouraged holding and stalling, in his opinion.
Yep. You don't want to get hit by him. Because they'll just cut you and the fight gets stopped. Good fights get stopped over a stupid cut because of elbows.
Okay, guys. Eagle.
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 Eagle. Hey, check out Fight Master June 19th, Spike TV. Head to support local MMA. Cranbrook, BC, Battle for the Border 2. Results at MMA Madhouse. Let's see. That's a wrap, boys. Thanks very much to all the godfathers of Canadian MMA for joining us tonight. We're out of here.